Perek Yud Aleph. Okay, everybody have a Tanas? We're ready to go. We are into home stretch for this first half of the Sefer, which is our agenda. Perek Yud Aleph. Vayehi. Kishmo Yavin Melech Chatzor. When Yavin Melech Chatzor heard, what did he hear? Yavin Melech Chatzor. You know what Chatzor is, of course? Chatzor is way up. Where's Chatzor on this map? Chatzor is way up here. North of the Kinneret. Chatzor. So when Yavin, king of Chatzor, heard, and they assume that the what did he hear? He heard all that had transpired in the previous chapter. What was the previous chapter?
The
battle of the south. Right, the battle of the south. Whether there was a miracle of the sun setting or not, miracle of the sun setting we discussed last week. But certainly, was it 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Was it the convention last week? That's right,
she
2 weeks ago.
To remember it.
2 weeks ago, yeah, okay. when he heard all that had transpired, Vayishlach et Yovav Melech Madon, Ve'amelech Shimron, Ve'amelech Achshaf. He sent messengers to Melech Madon, Melech Shimron, and Melech Achshaf. Don't necessarily know who or what or where these places are, but they are clearly somewhere in the north on the map. There's conjectures about where Achshaf is. You see this little, there's a question mark. Do you have the map?
I'm leaving. 5 minutes later.
Yeah. So, and that's my fault. Or my wife's fault. Anyway, there's certainly areas in the north, right? If you can see on the map, where the Kinneret is north of the Kinneret, you have the Chatzor, you have Memarom, you have the left.
Is it this one?
The one I just gave you.
Yeah. Oh,
the second
that's
side.
Okay.
Look at
the other
side. The one I just gave you. That's right. Right? My source page is always stapled from the top right. Excuse me?
Israeli style.
Yeah, well, they're in Hebrew,
yeah.
So you did. you can see that Achshav is listed on the map as a city in the north, but be that as it may, where these cities are is less the issue. They're all in the north, that's the main thing. The El HaMelachim Asher Mitzfon Bahar Uba'arava Negev Kinvot Uvashvela. And to all of the kings in the north, the mountain and the plains, Negev Kinrot, south of the Kinneret, or in the area of the Kinneret, Ubashvela, and along the coast, Ubnafot Dor Miyam, all the way to Dor. Dor is an interesting city. On this map it's spelled Dalad Aleph Reish. Anybody been to Dor?
Chof Dor.
Right.
Where they go snorkeling for the snails for the Tcheled.
Right, that's right. That's why Dor is famous. Dor was a Canaanite. That's right. Dor is an old Canaanite port. Port city in the time of the Canaanites. We had Haifa. We have Haifa. Right? In the time of the Canaanites, what Haifa serves today as the port city for Israel, Dor was in the world of the Canaanites of Sefer Yehoshua. So all of these cities in the north and all of these regions in the north, Hakna'ani mimizrach umiyam, the Canaanites from the east and from the west, v'ha'emori, the Amorites, v'ha'chiti, v'ha'prizi, v'ha'yevusi bahar, all of the Amorites in the mountains, v'ha'chivi tachat chermon, v'eretz ha'mitzbah, consent the Maragards, v'ha'chivi tachat chermon, v'ha'chivi all the way up to Mount Chermon in the Galil, in the Golan, v'eretz ha'mitzbah, eretz ha'mitzbah. What's Eretz HaMitzpah?
All the way up north.
All the way up north. Well, it's the Golan Heights in the mountains of Syria. Why? What does Eretz HaMitzpah mean?
Mitzpah is an
overview. Overlook, right? Tatzpit is a viewpoint.
The scouts are
Sofim. Right. All comes from the same root. Be'eretz HaMitzvah is the mountain range that overlooks the whole valley. That's the biblical, that's the description of what we would call the Golan Heights. Today, called Eretz HaMitzvah. So, who's being gathered into this battle? Who's being called to fight in this battle? Who is Melech Chatzor mobilizing?
Northern section.
Everybody. Right? Everybody. What's interesting here, in distinction to the previous chapter, where we talked about the cities and the king of Devir who organizes of the kings of the five cities, Lachish and Devir and Yerushalayim, five cities in the south. These aren't five cities. These are regions. So he's called three cities initially, Melech Madon, Melech Shimon, Melech Achshaf, and then all of the kings in the north, in the mountains, and in the valley, and in the plains, and the coastal cities of Dor, and the Canaanites in the east, and the Canaanites in the west, and the Amorites in the mountains, and the Jebusites in the city, on the mountains, v'achivi tachat Hamon, the Chivi all the way up to the Golan Heights, and into the area of Syria, Be'eretz HaMitzvah. There's nobody who's not being mobilized into this great battle. This is World War III, or World War pre-1A. This is a massive campaign. Essentially, one-on-one, the Canaanites have lost every campaign to Yoshua. The first attempt to unite the forces against Yoshua was the forces in the south, and that failed. But it was five kings, gathered together. So the king of Chatzor attempts to do something far more global, far greater, far larger, which is to bring all of the forces together in one. Take this whole region from Chatzor down to Dor up to the Chemon, and take this entire region together and gather all the forces as one to try to come down into the valley and take out Yehoshua and his army. This is clearly, from a size point of view, the largest gathering of military forces that Yehoshua has yet faced. And that's why the next pasuk says, "Vayetzu hem v'chol machanehem imam am rav kachol asher asfat hayam larov v'sus v'rechev rav mod." They all came out, they and their camps and their soldiers, am rav kachol asher asfat hayam. A nation as an army so big that it was like the sands of the banks of the sea, which is a reference that's clearly meant to parallel the reference to Israel. V'sus v'rechev rav ma'od, and on top of the numbers, they had an advantage over Israel that we couldn't compete with, namely. Horses and chariots. Sus v'rechev always has a unique meaning. Certainly in Sefer Yeshua and Shoftim has a unique meaning because Israel doesn't have horses and chariots. Israel only has foot soldiers. The enemy often has horses and chariots, and horses give a distinct strategic advantage to the army, and so do the chariots, because they're armored. And second of all, they can trample over the soldiers. So one horseman can take out hundreds of foot soldiers. Hundreds. So just rides over them and tramples them. And the notion that they have tens or hundreds of thousands of soldiers, and on top of that, horses and chariots. I'm right, we're talking about a military force. All of the entire northern region, it's exactly what Yeshua has constantly been afraid of. Namely, right? They united the unification of all of the armies of Canaan. Vayivadu kol hamalachim ha'ele. All of these kings came together in a vad, in a group. Vayavo vayachanu yachdav al me marom lihilachem im Yisrael. They gathered together in Mei Marom to wage war against Israel. Mei Marom, of course, is the valley just here west of Chatzor. So this is where the gathering of the forces is taking place. They're bringing them from the north, from the west, and from the east, and from the south of the region. All of that is an introduction. Paragraph break, meaning we shift gears now. Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua, Al tira mipnehem, ki machar ke'et kazot anachi naten et kulam chalalim lifnei Yisrael. Don't be afraid of them. By tomorrow, at this day, this time, I will give them all into your hands. They will all lie as carcasses before you. Et susehem ti'aker, you will uproot their horses. Vet markvotahem ti'srafesh, you'll burn their chariots by fire. Don't be afraid. Vayavo Yehoshua v'chol am hamilchama imo alehem al mei marom pit'om vayiplu behem. Yehoshua takes his entire army, the entire war, and he brings them up to mei marom suddenly. Meaning?
Sneak attack.
Surprise attack. How do you surprise hundreds of thousands of soldiers with hundreds of thousands of soldiers in the middle and make it a surprise attack? You do it in the middle of the night. It's the only one way to do it. Vayiplu behem, and they fell upon them. Vayitnem Hashem biyad Yisrael vayakum. God gave them into the hands of Israel. They smote them by Yirdufum. They chased them ad Tzidon Rabbah, all the way up to Tzidon. You know what Tzidon is? Tzor is Tyre. Tzidon is... what's the sister city to Tyre? Sidon. Lebanon. And these are the two major port cities in Lebanon, Tzor and Tzidon. Tyre and Sidon along the either side of the Litani River. Va'ad Misrafot Mayim, all the way up to Misrafot Mayim, which is again unclear as to where exactly it is. I'll show you on the map what's going on in a moment. Va'ad Bik'at Mitzpe Mizracha, and all the way to the valley of Mitzpe, meaning the mountain range called Eretz Mitzpe in the east. Vayakum ad bilti hishir lehem sarid. He smote them until there was none left. Vayas lehem Yeshua kasher amalo Hashem et susehem ikev et markvotahem saraf b'esh. He did exactly what God had said he would do, namely destroy the horses and burnt their chariots. The if you look at Pasuk Chet, Vayitnem Hashem b'yad Yisrael vayakum v'yirdufum, he smote them and he chased them, meaning there's two parts to this campaign. Part number one is to break up the army, and part number two is to chase the armies away, and that happens in three different places. Ad Tzidon Rabbah, Ad Misrafot Mayim, Ve'ad Bikat Mitzpeh Mizracha. Till to Tzor Tzidon, to the Golan, past the Golan and into the mountains of Syria, and to Misrafot Mayim. In other words, the retreat is happening in three different directions. Because Tzor is headed, or Tzidon is headed northwest. Eretz Mitzpeh, Bik'at Eretz Mitzpeh is northeast. And Misrafot Mayim, the assumption is that it's somewhere in the middle. In other words, you have this large army sitting there in the area of Chatzor, waiting to attack Israel, waiting to mobilize. Israel launches a preemptive strike in the middle of the night, surprise attack, to break up the camp. And once the camp is broken and the enemy starts to retreat, they divide up into three prongs, each one moving into three different directions. Why would the enemy retreat in three different directions? What's the logic?
Not together,
maybe. What's What's the logic of the enemy scattering? Once you break camp, then why does the enemy scatter in three different directions?
So they can attack them back from a different direction.
Possibly.
They can save themselves, or some of them.
Think about how this army was put together.
They go back to where they came from.
Yeah, they came from different directions. This is not a holistic army. This is not a national army. This is a group of cities and states and regions that have come together for an alliance against Israel. But you have the north, and you have the east, and you have the south, and you have the cities on the coast. And you have, everybody came from all kinds of different directions. Each one is an individual. There is no nation of united nation of Canaan. They're all different armies of different militias of different cities, which somehow coalesce in order to create this army against Israel. The moment Israel breaks the camp, they all scatter. Where do they scatter to? They scatter to wherever they came from. So at that point, Yeshua chases them in three different directions to push them as far back as he possibly can.
And it succeeds. One of his main objectives is not to have them united.
That objective he lost the moment they tried to unite in the first place.
No, but I'm saying, when they tried to unite, and now they're attacking them, then they're definitely...
Vayirudafum is the easy part. The hard part is chasing them back in the directions from which they came. That's the easy part. What's the hard part? No, the hard part is the initial campaign. The hard part is attacking 2 million soldiers in the middle of a valley with horses and chariots. That's the hard part. The battle's over. The moment they break camp and the enemy starts to retreat, the battle's over. Then it's just cleanup. The main part of the campaign is how do you conquer, how do you take out an army which is equal, if not larger, than the Israelite forces, soldier to soldier, together with horses and chariots, and the strategic advantage of attempting to a surprise attack against Israel. I mean, this is a major campaign. And the only strategic tool at Yehoshua's disposal in this case, the only thing that he has in his arsenal besides the Rabbanu Shel Olam, is the element of surprise. But to exercise the element of surprise, notice what Yehoshua has to do. Remember, where is Yehoshua's camp? Where is Yehoshua's camp? Where is home base? For Yehoshua. Where is home base for Yehoshua, general, in this entire story?
Okay, where is it?
I give up.
Where it's where it's been all along.
Somewhere. I mean,
you'll go. Yeshua's had the camp in Gilgal from the get go.
On this map, where would Gilgal be?
It's not in this map. That's a map of this region here. Right? Yeshua's camp is sitting in Gilgal. God comes to Yeshua and says to him, look at the end of the last parak. After the entire campaign in the south, Vayashav Yehoshua v'chol Yisrael imo v'chol machaneha Gilgala. After the entire camp in the south, the campaign in the south, Yeshua takes his army and he brings them back to home base, which is
Gilgal.
Gilgal.
You won't forget.
But where is that exactly? Like, if you look in this other map, where is Gilgal?
That's not a good map for this purposes. You have to look at this map.
Is it in the middle?
It's right near Yericho. It's just north of Yericho. If you want to see it from that perspective, on that map.
Okay.
But if you take a look on this map, you'll see it a little bit clearer. Here's the Dead Sea. Here's Yericho, here's Gilgal.
But it's next door.
To?
Yericho.
Yericho. So, yeah, because they set up that camp right after the conquest of Yericho.
It's more in the center rather than in the...
It's the center of the country from the perspective, depending where your north of the country is.
Is anybody there?
Where?
Well, he's out up north.
Yehoshua is here in Gilgal with his entire army. All 600,000 soldiers. By this point, probably about 400,000 soldiers, because 100 or so belong to Reuben and Gad. There's a big army here. God comes to him and he says, watch out, you're going to get, the north is gathering clouds of war. So he takes his army and he attacks the enemies, he attacks the armies of the north before they have a chance to group. Attacks them pitom. What does pitom mean? Surprise attack.
Where?
From here. That's the power of the story. The power of the story lies in one word.
Pitom.
Yeshua's ability to move his army from Gilgal, he's done it before. He attacked the forces in the south overnight, the forces in Givon overnight. He moved his army from Gilgal to Givon overnight to attack them in a surprise attack under the cover of darkness. But that's what, 20 kilometers? Maybe?
Yeah.
15 kilometers? This is Gilgal up to Hatzor.
That's a far distance.
That is a far distance. To move hundreds of thousands...
Foot. You don't even have a horse.
Correct. By foot. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers. To do so in a manner which maintains the element of surprise. Pitom means by surprise.
I thought it meant suddenly.
By surprise. That's what suddenly means. In other words, from the perspective of the enemy, it's suddenly.
This is a lot of people to be moving.
A lot of people to move under the cover of darkness,
surprise.
Under the cover of secrecy, and be able to succeed in surprising your enemy. In the land of Canaan, where Vayihi Kishmo Melech Chatzor, where they can hear everything that goes on. So, of course, you understand that that doesn't happen without some kind of assistance. That is the power of this story is not the breakup of the army or the breakup of or the retreat of the enemy. The power in this story is their ability to reach the enemy in a surprise attack, because once they reach them, what do? They take them out before they have a chance to group. Which they never bothered, they never even got to the point where they had to fight the horses and the chariots, because they took the army out before they had a chance to group. In the middle of the night, they're asleep in their beds, they're essentially in haven't yet organized information, they're still gathering their forces together. What Yeshua has in this campaign are two strategic advantages over his enemy. One
is Hashem. Number strategic.
Well, they both come from Hashem, but he has two strategic advantages in this story. Number one is he has the strategic advantage of a better intelligence system.
So, in other words, there were no scouts.
There are no satellites. There's no CNN, and there's no internet. So, their intent is to surprise. Is to launch a surprise attack against Yeshua in Gilgal. They're way up north. There's no way that down in Gilgal they're going to know that these armies in the north are gathering their forces together. They're essentially going to block this entire region and start marching down through the country in this massive army of epic proportions. And Yeshua finds out about it. How does Yeshua find out about it? How does Yeshua find out about it?
Find out about exactly what?
About this forces in the north that are gathering steam together.
You mean that they reunited?
That they're uniting, that they're putting together an army.
But you said somebody came and told them.
Didn't Hashem
Yeah, who?
Say Hashem.
So I said he has a better intelligence system.
But it goes back to
He's got a far more sophisticated satellite system.
It
all goes back to the same source. That's the first strategic advantage, is that Yeshua finds out about it before the army has a chance to gather themselves together in any kind of organized formation. This is not a holistic army. This is a group of armies from various communities, various regions, various cities, various nationalities. Chiti, Emori, Prizi, Chivi, they have nothing to do with each other. There's seven nations of Canaan. They're completely independent of each other. They live separately, they exist separately. For them to organize means that they have a massive effort of organization that they have to undergo in order to gather together as one army. Yeshua finds out a stage earlier that this is happening, which brings us to his second strategic advantage, which is the ability to move his army under the cover of secrecy from Gilgal all the way up north and take the army out before they have a chance to group and to launch a preemptive strike against the forces of the north. He's outnumbered. He's outgunned or outclassed. But because he has the ability to know what the enemy is doing in advance, and because he can move his army quickly, in secrecy, he can take out the enemy in a preemptive strike that removes, that essentially breaks their camp out of fear. Once they break, they're somewhat analogous to the Israeli Air Force taking out the Egyptian Air Force in the first 2 hours of the Six-Day War.
And that's what won the war.
The war was over.
Well, once they did that.
Correct. The Six-Day War was won in the first 2 hours of the day.
Right.
Because once you took out the strategic advantage of the Air Force, then Israel had the air advantage. The rest of it was cleanup. The war was over in the first 2 hours of the day. That's exactly what Yeshua hoped for. Break the camp overnight in a surprise attack. The rest of it is cleanup. Because now they're running. And they're going to run in all kinds of different directions. Yeshua will run after them. And that's exactly what happened. Yeshua comes back at that time, and he starts cleaning up. Now he'll go city by city to take out whatever is left of the military apparatus in each city. Conquers the city of Chatzor, takes out the king. Ki Chatzor lefanim hi rosh kol hamamlachot ha'ele. Chatzor was first, because Chatzor was the leader, the largest city of that region, and the head, the leader to whom all others looked to. Vayatku et kol hanefesh sheba lefi cherev hacharim, lo natar kol neshama, ve'et Chatzor saraf be'esh. Destroyed everybody, destroyed every soul, not one was left, and he razed the city to the ground. Of course, the taking out of every neshama, of every soul, and not leaving anybody behind, hacharim tacharim, is something we have discussed before. We've suggested based on, if you remember our discussion way back when, talking about the morality of Sefer Yeshua, I put forward the conjecture that phrase does not mean literally every non-combatant man, woman, and child, but rather a code name, that's a code word that the Torah uses for two types of battles. One is a siege, the goal it is to capture the inhabitants, and the other is a frontal attack, whose goal it is to claim victory until one side or the other surrenders. And that's essentially what you have. Vet kol harayam malachim ha'ele vet kol malchehem lakad Yeshua. Yeshua then conquers all of the kings and all of the cities in the region. Ve'akem lefi cherev, by the sword, hacharim otam, he destroys them, kasher tzivam Moshe ved Hashem, as God had commanded Moshe, lo tchaya kol neshama, the exact instruction as we have studied it. Rak kol ha'arim ha'omdot al tilam lo sarafam Yeshua, the cities themselves that were sitting on their original places on their hills, the tel is the mound of the city, lo srafam Yeshua does not burn them, with one exception. Zulati et Chatzor levada saraf Yeshua. He only burns Chatzor. Why only Chatzor? Why does he only burn Chatzor?
Would they be the instigators?
Instigators, the Pasuk Yud Aleph, or Pasuk Yud, it says that they are Rosh HaMamlachot Ha'ela, they're the head of all of these armies. In other words, you need to make a demonstrative example of Chatzor.
Well, that's where they were uniting also.
Because Chatzor was the initiate. Once Chatzor is gone, the rest of them are irrelevant. V'chol shlal harim ha'ele v'habehema bazazu lehem b'nei Yisrael. Israel took all of the spoils of these cities. Rak et kol ha'adam hikul fi cherev ad hishmidam otam lo hishiru kol neshama. As for the people, he destroyed them all, didn't leave a single one. Of course, again, can't be taken quite so literally, because there are many Canaanites left in these cities. They are inhabited by Canaanites for many, many years, as we'll see the next parak. Literally, the next parak, everything that's not yellow, everything that's yellow and not orange, are essentially, by the time Yeshua dies, is still Canaanite. Everything that's orange is Israelite.
So it's still a lot of Canaanite.
Oh, yeah.
More Canaanite.
In the north, it's all Canaanite.
Yeah.
And that's the theme of the second half of Sefer Yeshua. So you have to ask yourself the obvious question. It says that they didn't leave a single soul left, and yet they're all Canaanites here within 7 years. So clearly, not leaving a soul left doesn't mean not leaving a soul left.
That's what.
So I come back to the issue of the way the Torah presents two different types of battles, etc. Exactly. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Rak kol ha'arim ha'omdot al... Oh, sorry, we did that. Pasuk Yud Dalet. V'chol shtal ha'arim ha'ele v'abema v'azul lehem kol Yisrael. Rak et kol ha'abema yikil v'chadav ad yishmedam otam l'ayishu lehem kol neshama. Kashit tziva Hashem et Moshe avdo kein tziva Moshe et Yoshua. Whatever God had commanded Moshe, Moshe had commanded Yeshua. V'chein asa Yeshua. Lo hisir davar mikol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Yeshua's loyalty to Moshe, Yeshua's loyalty to the word of the instructions of God was absolute. Nothing was left out. V'yikach Yeshua et kol ha'aretz hazot. Yeshua has now taken the entire land. Ahar. V'et kol ha'negev. V'et kol eretz ha'goshen. Ve'et ha'shvela, ve'et ha'arava, ve'et ha'Yisrael u'shvelato. Regions of the land of Israel. The Negev, the Shvela, the Arava, the Arava on the east, the Shvela on the west, the plains and the coast. Minaha hechalak ha'ole Seir, in the south, in the area of Seir. Yad Balgad bibikat Lebanon, all the way up to the valley of Lebanon. Tachat Har Hermon, ve'et kol machahem lakad ve'yakem ve'imitem. All of the kings, he's smitten them, he's killed them. This is sounds like a summary of the entire conquest of Canaan, which is exactly what it is. Yamim rabim asa Yeshua et kol ha'malachim ha'ele melchama. Yeshua waged war with these kings for many, many days, or many years. Lo hayta ir asher yishlima b'nei Yisrael, none of these cities had offered peace and made peace with Israel. Bilti hachivi yoshve givon. One exception. Of all of the cities of Canaan, only one made peace with Israel, namely the cities of Givon. The rest of the cities were all taken through war. This was by divine decree. Lechazek et libam, to strengthen their hearts, to harden their hearts, sounds like Aro, likrat emulchamat Yisrael, in order to encourage them to wage war in Israel, leman hachrimam levoti ayot lehem tchina, in order to remove them so that they shouldn't have a stronghold or a foothold in the land, leman hashmidam kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe, in order to destroy them as God has commanded to Moshe. In other words, ultimately, there is an element of divine providence in the fact that the nations of Canaan are constantly trying to fight against this force that has never lost a war. If you think about the significance of that, from the time that they crossed the Jordan and split the Jordan River with this great big miracle, and the walls of Jericho fallen, battle after battle the Canaanites have instigated. The only battle that Israel instigates is the battle against Jericho. After that, every campaign is initiated by the Canaanites. Correct? From Battle of Jericho to Ai, the armies of the south, which they had started to form a united alliance, to the Battle of the North, which was another united or alliance that they tried to form. And Israel is constantly defending themselves against these attacking forces.
Things don't change.
Nothing changes. Nothing changes.
Just a few years.
Tell you a story about Ben Gurion in a minute. Vayavo Yehoshua ba'etahi, vayachret et ha'anakim min ahar min chevron, min dvir, min anav, u'mikol har Yehuda, u'mikol har Yisrael. Yeshua at that time went and he smote the anakim. Remember the anakim? Were the anakim?
Those
giants. Giants, right? I'm not sure that they're really giants as much as a nation called Anakim, but they were big people. Big people. From the mountain, from Hebron, from Dvir, from Anav, Har Yehuda, Im Arahem, Echirim Yeshua, and their cities. Lo nota Anakim Be'eretz B'nei Yisrael. No Anakim were left in Eretz B'nei Yisrael. Notice the phraseology. It's not called Eretz Yisrael, it's called Eretz B'nei Yisrael. Because the name of the nation is B'nai Yisrael. So Eretz B'nai Yisrael is the land that belongs to B'nai Yisrael. Rak ba'aza begat ba'ashtod nisharu. The only place where you had these anakim left was in the land of the Plishtim. Gat, Ashtod, Aza. Vayikach Yeshua et kol ha'aretz k'chol asher diber Hashem el Moshe, vayitna Yeshua l'nachala l'Yisrael k'machlokotam l'shivtehem, v'ha'aretz shakta mimilchama. And the land was quiet for 7 years it took Yeshua to conquer the land of Israel, north, south, east, to west. Four major campaigns, and then a whole bunch of little campaigns. The four major campaigns are Jericho and Ai, the battle in the south with the four kings, and the battle in the north with the forces of Canaanites and Chatzor. And after that, a whole bunch of little campaigns, what I would call cleanup. And at that point, we have Yeshua has strategic control over the center of the country and the axis from Gilgal to Ai. Strategic control from Ai down south into Hebron and Devir and Beersheba, where the battle that we read, that we learned in chapter 10, took place. And strategic control up to Shechem, he had from the very beginning, because Shechem was allied with Israel. And now he has strategic control into Emek Yisrael, Emek Beit Shan, and all the way up north into the area of Chatzar. Strategic control essentially in the entire country, north to south. That is the sort of the last battle or the last campaign that's described, and the description of the total region in the land of Israel that Yeshua has now led this national campaign in conquest of. And through all of this, where is the camp of Israel?
Gilgal.
In Gilgal.
At least we know that.
Right? Through all of this, where is the camp of Israel? In Gilgal. They stopped attacking us.
Well, we kept conquering and they didn't. I mean, after these 7 years, they didn't come back out again.
Well, there's nobody left to come back out. The military forces of the nations of Canaan, from north to south, have been taken out. The what's left are the nations around us. Ammon, Moab, Edom, Ashur. Right, there's a lot of nations around us. But there's essentially, militarily, the entire region here is essentially in our control. Control, but not yet settled. Where's the camp?
Gilgal.
So that we have control.
But that's
we don't necessarily have
settled. But that's a big problem that it's not settled.
Part two of Sefer Yeshua.
Okay.
Part one is conquest, part two is settlement. Kibush and Nachla. Two periods of 7 years each, divided up into a total of 14 years. That's exactly the transition, and the transition point is here. Now, what is different about this campaign and all the previous campaigns that we have seen? What makes this military campaign fundamentally different from all the previous military campaigns that we have seen?
You really didn't hear anything about the campaign. I mean, it was sort of like they one, etc. I mean, even him, a lot of
detail. There's much less detail described in terms of the actual battle. Mm-hmm. Virtually no details of the actual battle. You don't have the Shemesh B'Gifhon Dome, and you don't have the battle plans that you had at Ai, and you don't have the wall plans that you had at Jericho. There's just, there's an army, go, take it out, we'll help you, okay, go, take it out, and we move on. Next. Okay? That's number one. Number two, what else makes this chapter sound or feel different than previous chapters? What other ways is this story different from, again, the major campaigns that this first half of the Sefer describes to us are Yericho, Ai, Darom, which is from Givon, the story of Devir and Yerushalayim, and Safon, which is the story of Chatzor. Those are your four major campaigns.
Intervention.
Meaning?
Superior is the most successful.
Excuse me? Say it again.
The intelligence, the superior intelligence that we've had in the other wars, it doesn't sound like it's in there. That it's
meaning there's far less engagement of the role of God in this campaign than there is in the previous. Or that we're not told about. The Battle of Yericho is completely fought by Hashem, by the Malach who comes to Yeshua and he says, Sa'atzva Hashem Anochi, I am God's battle. This is my, take your shoes off. Remember, this is my campaign. All they did at the end after the walls fell is they walked inside. The Battle of Ai, initially, Yeshua didn't even want to fight the Battle of Ai. Al tiagashem et kol ha'am, don't even take the people there. This is an easy one. This is nothing. And he fails. And even though he had strategically and militarily the advantage, that first battle was completely decimated. Why? As a punishment for the Cherem of Yericho, as a punishment for the arrogance of Yeshua, for all kinds of reasons. But that first campaign was completely destroyed until they had to go back a second time. And the second time, who gave them the battle plan? Right? God tells them, you're going to go from this side, you're going to go from that side. The entire plan is orchestrated and dictated by God. The third campaign is Mechemet Adarom in the south. Yeshua takes his army overnight, Pitom, to the area of Givon, fights the forces of Yerushalayim, of Yarmut, of Yalavachish, of Devir. And then in the middle of this campaign, Shemesh b'Givhon Dom, b'Hayarech, b'Emek Hayalon, l'Hayak Yom Ahu, l'Shma Hashem b'Kol Ish, suddenly Yeshua is engaged in this artillery from the sky, this hail and brimstone hail coming down from the heavens in order to take out the enemy. There's sun standing still on some level, but to certainly back up, so I called it the miracle of backup from the heavens. In this campaign, there's nothing. Yeshua has advanced intelligence. God plays the role of the satellite. Right? I'm told. Yeshua takes his army overnight, or at least under the cover of darkness, all the way up north, which clearly requires some enormous luck or
intervention.
But then he begins his campaign. And what does God say to Yeshua? His instructions to Yeshua is Al tira mehem ki machar ke et gazot ani anochi noten et kulam chalalim lifnei Yisrael. By tomorrow they're all yours. Yeshua starts the campaign. Vayavo Yeshua v'chol ha'am imom alehem pitom vayiplu behem. They fell upon them, and they smote them, and they destroyed them. Vayiknem Hashem v'yad Yisrael. God gave them over into the hands of Israel. So you get the sense that in this campaign, God's role is far more in the background, far more one of intelligence, information, support, moral support, but you're on your own in this one. And without question, this is the largest of all the military campaigns that Yeshua has to fight. It covers the largest geographic region from Gilgal to Hazor, and from Hazor all the way up past into Syria. It covers the largest number of armies from all the regions together. The largest unified force. This is without question the hardest and largest of all of Yeshua's military campaign. The longest. And by the time this is over, the war is over. That's it. By the time this campaign is done, there's nobody left to challenge Yeshua. There's nobody in the south. They've already cut the country across the middle, so there's nobody in the center. And now they've taken out all the forces in the north. The Canaanites are essentially conquered and gone. And they've won the war.
But isn't it also true that this is the only battle where Yahushua is told beforehand, don't worry, you're going to win it?
It's the only battle we are
So even though he has to figure everything out, he has the reassurance from Hashem that he's going to be victorious.
Yeah, you have that in the previous battle too. Perek Yud Pasuk Chet. Perek Yud Pasuk Chet. And if you look at Perek Yud Pasuk Chet and Tet together, you'll see the parallel. ויאמר השם ליהושע אל תירא מהם כי בידך נתתים לא יעמוד איש מהם בפניך don't be afraid ויבוא אליהם ישוע פתאום כל הלילה למן על גלגל and Yeshua took them out suddenly how? Because he took his camp there all night long. I don't necessarily know that he managed to get his camp all the way up north in one night, but he's certainly able to do it in a manner which is parallel to the previous campaign, namely this has become Yeshua's modus operandi. That if he's faced with a large army, he'd rather take the army out under the cover of darkness in a surprise attack before the army has a chance to group, because as a unified force, they are a formidable one. Remember Yeshua's two strategic challenges, the walls and the army. So the walls he's essentially dealt with. Why? Because all these armies are coming out to attack him. So they have to take their armies outside of the walls. After Yericho, the walls were clearly perceived as to be an irrelevant issue in the land of Israel. So the armies are now coming out to him. But then he has to deal with the second strategic issue, which is the unification of these armies. So his counter to the second strategic issue is to launch the preemptive strikes under the cover of darkness that will break the army before they have a chance to group. But you get a sense from this sequence that the level of divine involvement, the level of active, miraculous engagement in partnership with Yeshua is decreasing as the story progresses. From the walls of Yericho to the battle plans of Ai, to the backup in the Battle of Givon, to the moral support in the Battle of the North. It's almost as if Yeshua, as the battle continues, Yeshua plays more of a role and God plays less of a role.
So is God putting more faith in him?
That's not an accident. That's right. That's not an accident. Not only is it a question of putting more faith in Yeshua, which is certainly true, I think it's also a function of design. What's the goal here? The goal is to reach the maturity and the experience of the Israelite leadership, both in terms of the political leadership of Yeshua and the military strength of the people, to wean them off the reliance on God or the reliance on miracles. It's not an accident that the further along they go in the process, the less divine intervention there is. All of this starts one step earlier from the crossing of the Yarden, which parallels Yetziat Mitzrayim's Kriyat Yamsuf. But then slowly, battle by battle, there's far less engagement. Here the battle is fought by God, designed by God. Here the battle is fought by Israel, but the battle plan is set out by God, instructions, line by line. Here, Yeshua develops the battle plan, but God sends the artillery from heaven and the backup. And here, there's no divine intervention other than behind the scenes, kind of miraculous, kind of divine providence of God is with me. Hashem Ayayimah. That mean?
I don't know. It must be something.
Different types of leadership.
The parallel to here, when we're crossing the Yarden and bringing the walls down, is parallel to the kind of battles that we saw under the leadership of Moshe when we left Egypt. Yetziat Mitzrayim. Yad Chazakah, Zor Netiyah, God's hand. Hashem nilcham lehem b'mitzrayim, God is fighting them in Mitzrayim. The kind of battle that we see in the north is the kind of battle we see in the world of David HaMelech. Where David is this great warrior, he goes out to fight his battles, he conquers, he's victorious, he's successful, and he turns to Kadosh Baruch Hu and he says, thank you, but there's no divine intervention. What's fascinating about the story of David in Sefer Shmuel is there's not a single event, there's not a single military campaign that is described with any kind of supernatural or divine intervention or miraculous nature. Not a one. That's not an accident. You have to mature from a world of Yetziat Mitzrayim to the world of darkness. Both militarily and spiritually. There is a notion, a mistaken notion, that the greater we are, the more direct involvement God has in our success. From a Tanakh perspective, it's the other way around. The greater we are, the greater God can take a step, the greater the ability for God to take a step back and to allow us to essentially lead our lives. The more direct intervention God has to have, the weaker we are spiritually.